Sorry about that, Mr. Golding, so may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Jonathan Golding on behalf of debtor defendant appellant Sophia Katzman. We are before the court today on our appeal of the district court's reversal of the bankruptcy court's judgment on partial findings for the debtor, finding that no fraudulent intent existed which would warrant the denial of discharge under 11 U.S.C. 727. The core of this appeal is the district court's choice of law. The district court, sitting in review, erred when it determined that the bankruptcy court, as trier of fact, did not apply the correct standard for determining intent when it actually applied functionally the same standard. The district court further erred in interpreting that the standard for determining intent as mandatory and conclusive when it is merely permissive. And the district court erred in concluding that the bankruptcy court's findings of fact, when that standard is applied, require a finding of intent. When they preclude such a finding where each and every allegation was found to lack intent.
Now, you were not her lawyer in the bankruptcy court.
Correct.
So that fellow named Frieden or something?
Frieden, I believe.
Yeah. Did he testify?
At the trial? No, Your Honor.
Well, has any effort been made to obtain testimony from him? Isn't he rather a critical witness?
I'm not sure how, Your Honor.
Well, the question is whether she engaged in fraud, right?
So that would depend
in part on what her lawyer told her.
Well, I think, Your Honor, you are focusing on what is an appropriate question because the district court's rather confusing order.
That's why I'm asking whether he was called as a witness, and if not, why not?
The reason why not, I believe, is that this was a judgment that was rendered on motion of the defendant at the conclusion of plaintiff's case. It was a motion for partial findings, which the bankruptcy court granted, finding that there was no intent. So the defendant never put on
No, I understand in the bankruptcy court, but what about in the district court?
I did not handle that case either, Your Honor.
I understand Mr. Skavish to be arguing in part that because the statements were false and Ms. Katzman allegedly knew they were false and made them deliberately, she necessarily made them with fraudulent intent, and I'd like you to address that point.
Well, the trial court made a determination that these statements lacked the fraudulent intent required for a finding.
Well, see, what I don't understand about that, we can assume, I think, that if she wasn't trying to steal money from any, you know, creditor. So let's assume that. But still, it's fraud knowingly to violate the requirement of naming all your creditors, right? That's fraud. That's a crime, isn't it? Not a crime?
I'm not going to say that it rises to the level of crime.
Why
Your
doesn't
Honor?
It rise? Bankruptcy fraud is a crime. And if you're asked to list, if you're told you have to list all your creditors, and you know you have to list all your creditors, but you decide for personal reasons, which are perfectly good reasons actually, you decide you're not going to list them. It'd be embarrassing. You intend to repay them eventually, and yet if you list them as creditors and then you get a discharge, they're going to be angry at you because they think you, you know, have wiped out your debt to them, which you have, but she intends to pay them. But she is knowingly violating the, you know, requirement of bankruptcy law. You can't get a discharge without listing all your creditors. I mean, unless you make a mistake, but then it's not fraud, right?
Correct, Your Honor. But
so she knew that these were creditors, and yet she deliberately did not list them as creditors. Why isn't that fraud?
The bankruptcy court found that she was very
confused. Now, you ask me why that. You tell me. I don't care what that if. Why is that not fraud? Deliberately to omit creditors from your bankruptcy petition.
Because Ms. Katzmann did not understand either the requirement or the nature of her debt.
Oh, no, she knew she had to list her creditors, didn't she? And she knew these were creditors. In fact, the reason she didn't want to list them was that she didn't want them to show up as creditors whose claims against her had been discharged.
And that was because she wanted the family. She felt like she needed to pay the family back. Yeah. Right?
That is her testimony. But there is also testimony that there was confusion over whether it was her obligation or her ex-husband's obligation or whether these debts had been repaid. And, for example, Ms. Edelman
confusion
was initially...
Over, confusion over what?
Over
whether
whose obligation
they were creditors?
I'm sorry.
She was confused about whether they were creditors?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where did Judge Weedoff say that?
Judge Weedoff did not. It was Judge Sonderby who was the trier of fact. Judge Sonderby found that the defendant had a reasonable belief that some of these debts were not her debts.
What do you mean, some of these debts? Some of these debts were not what?
Were not her debts, that they had become her husband's obligation.
What about the other debts? Did she think that she didn't that these relatives were not creditors? Was there a finding to that effect?
No, Your Honor, but again, this case was not completely tried.
What, do you want a further trial?
Well, the defendant should be able to put on her case. Part of the issue with
What's
the district
her case?
Course...
That she didn't think these people were creditors?
And that the debts had been
I
repaid.
I don't believe that.
The defendant's English is poor, and she certainly...
She had a lawyer.
Yes, Your Honor. Who would
well,
have
didn't
been...
a lawyer tell her, you know, you have to list... or he has to list the creditors?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you going to, if we remanded, would you call him as a witness?
That seems like an appropriate thing to do.
That's a kind of vague answer.
Well, I don't know that I'll be trying the case, but certainly I would like to know more about, on the record, why certain decisions were made, why Ms. Edelman was removed. She was initially disclosed in the initial bankruptcy filing. And what advice the attorney gave.
Well, did you argue that to in the district court?
I did not make the argument in the district court, Your Honor.
Now, the only one, at least according to what the court found, that she thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was a debt that belonged to the husband, was what was owed to the stepson, right? Because she thought that was the husband's debt.
Yes. The debt to the stepson has been objected to, and that objection is pending, as is the stepson's complaint for non-dischargeability of that specific debt. But at issue here is what the effect of the Yannakis test is. And while that test, if it is necessary to apply it, does... what that does is shifts the burden of proof from the plaintiff to the defendant. So the bankruptcy court found that there was a lack of intent following the close of the plaintiff's case.
A lack of intent to do what?
A lack of fraudulent intent.
And meaning what?
That the defendant did not intend to defraud the trustee or her creditors.
That's where you're missing the point. You don't have to intend to take money from anyone. It's fraud to lie about your creditors. Whatever your intent, whatever your pecuniary ambitions are, you're not allowed to fill out a false bankruptcy petition. That's what you don't seem to see, and you don't argue. And you, so as a result, you don't make much, if anything, in your brief of this suggestion that she didn't know they were creditors. You're going on the fact that apparently she has a good faith intent to try to repay these people. And that's not an excuse for not listing creditors. I mean, that would be ridiculous. Imagine a bankrupt who says, well, I didn't list any creditors because, you know, I'm hoping to pay them in the future after I get back on my feet, right? That doesn't work.
Your Honor, I'm focusing on the fact that the trier of fact made a determination of a lack of intent, which is a highly deferential standard.
You're looking at the wrong intent. And maybe the trier of fact was looking at the wrong. It doesn't have to be pecuniary. You can go to prison for not listing creditors, and it's not a defense to say I didn't list them because it was unnecessary. I didn't have any money at the time, so what would the point be? And I'm going to pay them later. Especially if the lawyer, who you did not make any effort to get to testify, said, yeah, I told you, you have to list your creditors.
Is there any way that the record could infer that these were gifts from the relatives and friends?
I think it could be interpreted that way, Your Honor, that these were, as the defendant testified, these were people who were helping her out, they were friends
and
family.
But then why did she say she was going to repay them if they were gifts? You don't repay gifts.
Well, you repay them in kind.
What does that mean?
I believe that that's what friends and family.
It means she intended not to pay them back, but to what? Give them kisses or something? Is that what you have in mind?
Perhaps.
Perhaps. You really think that?
Well, the
debtor's yeah, I'm not listing my creditors. I'm going to go kiss my creditors after I get a discharge and say, I'm very sorry, I have no money to pay you. I'm going to give you a big, big smooch. Right? That's what you're saying.
Well, she has no money to pay them in any case.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Golding. We'll hear from Mr. Stone.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Monty Stone. I represent the appellee, Vladimir Skavish. Your Honors, there are two reasons why the trial court erred. The first is what was discussed with the appellant at length. The debtor stated on the stand that she omitted creditors from her bankruptcy schedule because she wanted to pay them back. Judge Sonderby, in her ruling, said that she did find that what the debtor did was wrong, but she didn't think it rose to the level of fraudulent intent, and she never explains what that means. And the district court, in dicta, suggested...
Well, she explained that she thought that Ms. Katzman was highly credible.
Okay. So her testimony was highly credible. Everything she said was true. When she said that she omitted them because she wanted to pay them back, she was telling the truth. I agreed. She was highly credible. There was nothing in her testimony that we are saying she lied about. In fact, and my office did do the trial. It was one of my partners, Mr. Schneider. We were shocked because we took her deposition and we were wondering, all right, how are we going to get this on the record? How are we going to get her to say that she left them off because she wanted to repay them? And she just said it in her deposition. And then I said, all right, great, you've got your deposition transcript. Now when she says something else at trial, you're going to ding her at trial. She put her on the stand and she said it again. I admit I omitted them because I want to pay them back. So, you know, I agree, she was highly credible. She didn't lie about a thing. And she admitted under oath on the stand that she left these people off of her schedules because she wanted to repay them. And that's fraud of the bankruptcy court. That's grounds for denial of discharge under 727 right there. But the district court didn't use that as a vehicle for overturning the bankruptcy court because that would require a finding of abuse of discretion. And the district court thought that there was abuse of discretion, and I think that this court should find the same way if that's the direction you choose to go, that Judge Sonderby was trying to do her a favor, perhaps as the court suggested that maybe these were gifts, these were nice people, you know, she didn't have any money anyway, I'm going to let her off the hook. But that was an abuse of discretion. You know, the code is very clear on what you can and can't do on your schedules, and she broke the rules. What the district court did instead was find that the bankruptcy court had applied the wrong test. And I think that that is a key factor to consider when deciding how to treat the district court, the bankruptcy court's
ruling. So what
supports
your position that bankruptcy courts have to state on the record they are considering the cumulative effect of omissions in order to be found to have applied the correct legal standard?
Because that's the legal standard. What the bankruptcy court did was look at five isolated incidents and made no statement on the record in a written ruling at all, anything that we could even infer that she was considering the cumulative effect of the defendant's conduct. And that's not the right rule. You know, the correct rule is that the court has to look at the cumulative effect of the conduct. Otherwise, you could have five, you could have 10, you could have 100, you know, little mistakes in the bankruptcy schedule showing that this person clearly did not care to tell the truth on these schedules.
So, I mean, bottom line, your argument is that her testimony, Ms. Katzman's testimony, absolutely compelled a finding of fraudulent intent.
On that particular issue, yes, Judge. Her testimony concerning her her testimony concerning the omission of those creditors by itself, in our opinion, and we were shocked when we got a ruling to the contrary, was an absolute slam dunk. That is the denial of discharge. When you have somebody under oath say, yes, I lied on my bankruptcy schedules, and I did it because I wanted to circumvent the bankruptcy code, which she said a little more colloquially, but that's basically what she said, I don't see how you can rule any other way. But I also think that Judge Sonderby not applying the correct analysis, not taking the debtor's conduct as a whole, and showing that, you know, this is somebody who really did not care about what she was filling out. She really didn't. Any financial issue about all of these, her finances are a lot worse off now than they were a few years before because she was going through a divorce. But any issue which was even remotely complicated on her schedule, she testified, I didn't look into it, I didn't know, I didn't understand. This is somebody who had the benefit of counsel and spent no time figuring out that, you know, the timeshare that she had, the property she had in Nevada, you know, the alimony is substantial, several thousand dollars a month, alimony payments she was receiving from her husband, what months she'd gotten them for. And these are not things which are hard to research either. Either you do a title search, you know, you check a bank statement to see, you know, which months did I get paid. There's an active divorce case going on. You could call divorce counsel to find out when were the payments made. This is information she could have found out. We're putting forth a little bit of effort, and she didn't put forth any. So, you know, I think that the fact that there are just a litany of mistakes in these bankruptcy schedules also compels the denial of discharge.
So let me ask you this, just getting back to the standard the bankruptcy court applied, because the bankruptcy court inferred things from the facts and circumstances versus the cumulative effect, and you're saying those don't equate to the same thing.
Correct. That's exactly what I'm saying, Judge. I think that counsel misspoke before when he said the Yonicus test. I think that really gets to the heart of the issue.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
The Yonicus, which is a case, case. He used the term the Yonicus test, but that's not an accurate statement. There were actually three separate tests in Yonicus. And I spell this out in my brief. There are different avenues that a bankruptcy court can go down to try to infer fraudulent intent. And I think that it's the trier of facts prerogative to decide what order she wants to conduct the analysis, you know, which she thinks are going to bear fruit. But ultimately, she's got to consider all of the tools in her toolbox. She has to at least consider them in making this decision. And here, when you have not one, not two, but several issues on the bankruptcy schedule, and to not at least address the fact that, you know, well, yeah, you've brought up a lot of different issues in your schedules. Maybe, you know, let's look at them all together and see what that tells us as a sort of a larger story. To not even give any deference to that test whatsoever is an error of law that should be reversed as well. So, ultimately, Your Honors, what this comes down to is the classic case: we give bankruptcy discharges to the honest but unfortunate debtor. Supreme Court said that in Local Loan versus Hunt. Ms. Katzen was certainly unfortunate, we're not denying that, but she wasn't honest. And if you're not honest, you don't get a discharge.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Stone. Mr. Golden, your time has expired, but if you'd like another minute, you may have it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, again, the defendant did not have an opportunity to rebut the presumption. Her counsel reserved the right to present her argument on page 192, line 12 of the trial transcript. And so if the district court's order is interpreted in accordance with this court's rulings in Village of San Jose and Freeland v. Indonis, it created a shift of the burden of proof, which the defendant should be able to address. And as far as the needing to address the multitude of the accusations...
Why do you think there are missing facts?
I think the defendant should have the opportunity to explore those facts in the trial.
What are those facts? What are the missing facts?
The missing facts may be that there is an explanation for what she meant when she said that she intended to pay these people back, which was in some way other than at the expense of creditors.
Expense of creditors?
At the expense of creditors, which is an element to the 727.
But I thought the creditors aren't going to get anything.
They aren't.
So what does it mean to be at the expense of creditors?
Well, it'd be difficult for it to be at the expense of creditors if they're not going to receive anything.
Okay, well, thank you very much.